You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hi there, Duke fans. Episode 612 of the DBR podcast, the Duke Basketball Roundup. I'm Jason Evans. I'm here with Donald Wine. It's the day after Selection Sunday. What would you call this? Make your mark Monday or something like that? Because you're marking off your bracket today. That's what everybody's doing. That's what we've been doing. And Donald, this is the episode where we will tell everyone the exact right teams, 100%. These are the teams that are going to win every single game in the tournament because you and I have the perfect crystal balls.
I'm not going to say that. I don't have the perfect crystal ball. I slept on it. I've filled out a couple of brackets. I'm no closer now than I was yesterday on how this tournament is going to go. I think that's how the state of the season has gone. There's a lot of parity here. And, you know, even with our team, I've kind of gone back and forth on what I think we can do. But this is the show we're going to talk about all of that, Jason. We're going to air it all out and make. And when we're done, everyone's going to have a very muddy, clear answer on how this tournament's going to go. Somebody's going to win. It might be us. It might not be. But you're going to find out on the show who it may or may not be.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, if you're out there and you're listening to this, you're like, these guys, what do they know? You know, and you don't want to really stick around to hear us do our picks. Stick around for something else because we're going to be discussing some perspectives, some interesting notes about this Duke team, some stuff that we've heard from sources close to the team about sort of what space their head is in right now, how the Duke team is doing as it prepares for the most important games of the season. Hopefully games, could be one game, but hopefully it's six more games, obviously. So again, that's deep tease. Stick around because that's going to be, I think, some very interesting stuff for you to hear from us. But Donald, we're going to begin with the brackets. And before we get to our own picks, I wanted to just, you know, look a little bit at Duke's spot in the brackets, because I've heard a lot of folks grousing and complaining. Look, I was one of them. The Duke got a 4 instead of a 3. And I really wanted, I was like, God, why didn't we get that number 3 seed that I really felt like we deserved? And I was looking, you know, I can understand Illinois being ahead of us on that 3 line because they just won the Big Ten. But I was looking at like Kentucky and Baylor. Both of those teams are behind Duke in the efficiency metrics. Duke has a neutral court win against Baylor. I mean, come on. You know, what more do we need to do to prove that we are better than Baylor? And, you know, why did they get 3s and Duke get a 4? And I think it was because the committee valued something more than they valued the efficiency metrics. They valued the who did you beat metric. Baylor had wins over Auburn, Florida, Iowa State, Kansas, BYU, and Texas. I mean, that is really impressive. Kentucky, they had wins over UNC, Auburn, Tennessee. Duke had wins over Baylor and Clemson, Wake Forest, both those games at home, you know? Like, if you look at who did you beat, how impressive are your victories? I'm sorry, but, like, Duke doesn't stack up against a team like a Kentucky or a Baylor. And a lot of it is that those teams played in two conferences, the Big 12 and the SEC, where there were a lot of opportunities to get big wins, but there were also lots of opportunities to get big losses. And frankly, Duke and the ACC, really, it was UNC, and that's it. I mean, to be honest, if you look at Duke's schedule, we had the win over Baylor, but there were three other games that we had a chance to make, you know, a big impression on the committee. We lost to Carolina twice. We lost to Arizona. And frankly, those are the only four games on our schedule where we could do anything like beating an Auburn or an Iowa State or a Kansas or a Tennessee or, and so on that Kentucky and Baylor beat. And so, Donald, I'll let you jump in. But that, I think that's why Duke is a four, not a three.
Jason, this is where I talk about the fact that all season and throughout this podcast, since we started really going into the metrics, I've always said that while the metrics do tell a story, that one story that is being left out of the metrics is the eye test. I've always been a big fan of the eye test. I've always been a team of that team. It doesn't matter what they tell me, what the metrics tell me. When I see this team on TV, that team is good. That is what the committee valued this year. It seems like even the KenPom that we kind of, we really go into and really use a lot in our pod, they kind of threw those metrics aside too. And I'll say that, you know, metrics have a place in this, and so does the eye test. But the thing about the eye test is that it's won back in October. It's not won in February and March. It's won in October. It's won in early November, when these teams are playing non-conference schedules against each other, right? You mentioned it's almost like the fact that it's the same as college football. The SEC is like nine teams in the top 25, so that when they play each other a week, everyone's like, oh, this is a really big game because they're two ranked teams. Yeah, of course they are, because you ranked them there at the beginning of the season before you had a chance to see them. And for the ACC, the problem with that is that they had to start at the bottom and work their way up, and they didn't do that in November and December when – non-conference schedule wise, we weren't doing great as a conference. And that was something that we have talked about even before the season started, that the ACC needed to do to get some respect around here. And I think when it comes to that, that respect, again, from a conference perspective, was earned back in October when everybody said the SEC and the Big Ten and the Big 12 were going to be the power conferences in college basketball, and even in the Big East to a certain extent. And so we didn't have a lot of those teams on our schedule. In the teams that we did face, we didn't do as well against, right? We beat Michigan State, we beat Baylor, as you mentioned, but we lost to Arkansas. You know, we didn't get a chance to play some of those other teams. And then when we got into the conference, everyone said, well, the ACC is not good this year, so beating a Wake Forest or a Clemson doesn't really matter. That's where it happened. And I think, Jason, you know, we talked yesterday when we talked about the teams that didn't make the tournament, right? We talked about how Pitt was one of the first four left out. Pitt had a historically bad non-conference schedule, and a lot of people are looking at that and saying Pitt can say that they were screwed in a lot of different ways, but they were not, they did not do themselves any favors by playing a non-conference schedule that even had Seth Greenberg saying, yo, that's a terrible non-conference schedule. And I think at the end of the day, that's where, again, a lot of these biases come into play, and there's biases in that room. Right. That we can't, this human element of this is that they look at all these things, and they even said that, you know, they looked at the human element of this thing, and they looked at all these different things, and they ended up discarding the net. They didn't discarding KenPom and Bart Torvik and all these other services that we like to use because we think that's what they're using in the room. They went back to the default of which team looks good when we watch them play, which team do we want to see play each other in the NCAA tournament? And that's why we ended up where we are. I think four is fine. Right. Like, we're still in the East. We're still playing in Brooklyn. We don't have to play that far from home, but we have, or I'm sorry, we're in the South. I apologize. We're in the South.
Yeah.
But we're a four seed. We still get to go to Brooklyn. So we're going to be close to home in a place that we love playing in New York City. And then we go to Dallas, which isn't as far. We've had to go to LA sometimes as a one seed. Now we're a four seed going to Dallas. So we're still in there, right? In Dallas, we need to get used to, because Jason, we're going there next year. SMU, shout out them. We're going to be playing there a lot more. So this is a way for them to say, hey, this is a great chance for us to do something in a state that we're going to have to call our, you know, road away from home for the next 10 years, whatever that is. So Duke has a lot of work to do, but Duke is also in a decent spot. At the end of the day, you can't do much more than this, but I understand why people are upset, but the eye test is the reason why we're in this position.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's get to our brackets, Donald. And before we do our final fours, I just want to ask you, actually, I'll go first and then you can tell me, like, characterize your picks, your bracket. This was a year of unbelievable upsets all across the sport. Like, you know, no one, unranked teams at home, or I should say ranked teams playing on the road, like, they only won like 30% of their games or something crazy like that. So with all that in mind, if I have to characterize my bracket, like, my first couple rounds are really chalky. I've got, you know, I got some double digit seeds here and there, but for the most part, I'm super chalky. And that's just because I can't figure out which is, they're going to be upset. I'm not getting my games all right, but I can't figure out which of these teams is going to lose to which one. Other than, like I said, I got a couple low seeds, but then the crazy thing with me is, so I'm really chalky until you get to like my final eight, my final four. And then suddenly I've got unexpected teams. Like I've only got one seed in the final four. I'm not going to tell you who it is yet, but so go ahead and describe your bracket to me.
Yeah, it's sort of the same, right? There's some chalk involved, but I also think that, again, even the chalk has changed over the last week. If we had done this show a week ago, we'd have, like, everyone would be like, yo, we're in a bracket with Houston, the number one overall seed and probably the most dangerous country and the scariest team in the country, right? A team that nobody wanted no smoke with a week ago. Now that team is called, their name is UConn. And now everyone's saying, oh, I don't want no smoke with UConn. It's weird how it's even changed over the course of a week. But even when you look at it, I do find there is some opportunities here for some upsets. I look at some of the historical things when I consider some of these brackets too, like this. You know, there's four teams in the play-in game that are 10 seeds. Mm-hmm. Every single year, it feels like, since that has come into about, one of those teams has won an extra game in the tournament, right? They win the play-in game, and then they win their first-round game. Some have even gone to the Final Four. I think we've had a couple instances of that. So you look at that, and you kind of go, okay, do I pick one of those teams? There's also the 5-12 upset. Everyone loves the 5-12 upset. But gather this, Jason. The 11 seed actually has a winning record against the 6 seeds since the last like 20 years or something like that. So again, you're looking at some of these 11 seeds, and some of these 11 seeds look really good. Some of these 12 seeds look pretty decent, like decent matches. And so, and then you also have the 5 seeds where, as we were talking about with the expansion of the tournament, some of these teams that were probably going to be 14 and 13 seed, or I'm sorry, 10 or 11 seeds were pushed down by some of the teams that got into the tournament based on, you know, winning their conference tournament and knocking some of these bubble teams out. So you have some of these that may be undervalued here. We have some undervalued picks. It's a matter of finding which ones those are. As you mentioned, I am not going to get this one right. Nobody has. And probably I'd be far pressed to predict that no one's going to have a perfect bracket by the end of the first weekend. But that's the beauty of this thing.
You're totally right. You're totally right. So you're talking about the 11 seeds. I've actually picked 3 of the 4 11 seeds to win their first round game.
And you wouldn't, and years ago, if you had said that, Jason, I'd be like, Jason, what are you doing? That is just absolutely, that's never going to happen. And now you're kind of sitting there like, yeah, I see 3 of those teams that could probably win. They may not all win, but it's right. Not as far-fetched a mismatch as it used to be.
All right, so I got to hear this from you. Do you have any double-digit seeds? How many double-digit seeds do you have in the Sweet 16?
In the Sweet 16, I have to count them. In the Sweet 16, funny story, Jason, as of right now, I have 0, which is probably going to change between now and Thursday. Because, again, one of the things that I do also do, the reason why I don't really solidify my picks until Wednesday night or Thursday is because I want to watch these first 4 games. Because there's been times I have picked – I picked George Mason when they went to the Final Four out of the play-in game. I picked them just by seeing the first half of their game. And I was like, oh, this team is strong. This team is stronger than everyone thinks. I believe it was Syracuse also got to the Final Four as a 11 seed or something like that. But when I saw them play the first game, I was like, look, this is happening right here. I see Jim Boeheim running this all the way and creating one of these magical moments. And I was able to pick those. So I do think there's going to be a double-digit seed in my Sweet 16 when it's all said and done. I just don't have it right now.
Okay, so I've got 2 of them. I got New Mexico, Got New Mexico beating Clemson and then beating Baylor. So I've got New Mexico getting to the Sweet 16. And then I've got a 10 seed getting to the Sweet 16. I have Drake, believe it or not, taking out Washington State and then beating Iowa State, one of the hottest teams around. Everyone seems to love Iowa State. I got Drake beating them and making the Sweet 16. Those are like my two biggest upset picks. All right, man.
Of course, those two teams, Jason, Drake and Iowa State, both playing very close to home. And we've seen where a team that is a like a double digit seed or like a seven seed or something like that. Remember, we had to go down to Greenville, South Carolina as a two seed in 2017 and face South Carolina basically on their home floor and got ran out the gym. Drake, about an hour and a half away from Omaha. So was Iowa State. So there's Ames, whatever. So these teams are basically playing a home game in Omaha, and advantage could be Drake there, especially given the momentum.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So time for the final four picks. Who you got, my friend?
Okay, Jason. So as you know, and a lot of people out there do, I usually do one a year because I'm a homer. I don't care. My tournament ends when Duke ends. And so I like to set up my bracket that way. So I have a bracket that is a homer pick that has Duke winning. That is not the one I'm going to tell you about today. I'm going to tell you about the real bracket that I'm going to be submitting as of right now. And again, subject to change because it's still only Monday. But right now I have out of the East, I have Iowa State. Out of the South, I have Houston. Out of the Midwest, I have Purdue. And out of the West, I have Arizona. I have Houston versus Arizona in the final, and the Cougs cut down the nets in Glendale. Yes, I said it. Arizona will get to a Final Four and a national championship in their home state and lose to Houston.
All right. So here's what I got. I got UConn coming out of the East. I'm sorry. They just look too damn good right now. I've got Arizona over Carolina coming out of whatever the West that is. I can't do like you. I can't pick against Duke. So I've got the Blue Devils.
Yeah.
I got the Blue Devils in my Final Four, and I've got Creighton. I've got a 1, 2, 3, and 4 seeds. And on Duke's side of the bracket, Duke and Creighton, matching up in one national semifinal. I've got Duke playing Arizona for the national title in Glendale, and then the Dukies just break Arizona's heart by winning that game.
Again.
A rematch from earlier in the year. So I got Duke winning it all.
Can we wave to Caleb Love's teammates or his fans or whatever after that game? Basically, because then we're going to be going back there, right? In like 8 months, we're going to be going back to Arizona. So it'd be nice to come back there with a nice little title to hold over their head.
Yeah, and if I'm being really honest, if I did this with my head and not my heart, then probably every time I said the words Duke, you probably could substitute the words Houston. I think Houston's really, really good. But
so, Jason, it's funny. We're looking at this bracket, and I always look at some teams that I think, oh, yeah, these are teams, like, during the season I've said are really, really good. Houston's been good all year. They've been a team that we've talked about. They've been, like, the number one of all the metrics basically the entire year. Marquette, I saw them in person here in D.C., and I was like, man, this team is a problem. Marquette is in the South. Of course, our beloved Blue Devils are in the South. Houston is in the South. So this is a region where I was like, oh, this, I can't even set this up where teams that I like will end up facing each other, then I can do coin flips. Everyone's in the same bracket. Like, for the teams that I kind of really like, are all in the same region, which really, really, really angers me because I wish they were spread out a little bit more. But hey, to win a national championship, you got to beat the best teams in the country. And so that means it starts in the South for us.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Like I promised at the start of this podcast, we got some more stuff to talk to you about that is not specifically related to the tourney. It is more about, how is Duke feeling right now? How are the Blue Devils doing? We got a little bit of inside info on that coming up right after the break. Donald, we're back, and I want to start with this. A question of how the fans out there are feeling about this Duke team. Because last year, Duke won the ACC tournament. We were a 5 seed. And I'm telling you, all of us felt great about where Duke was. This year, we got knocked out in our first game of the ACC tournament, and we're a 4 seed. And it feels like the fan base is incredibly pessimistic. We're a higher seed than we were a year ago, and the number of people I'm encountering, talking to, getting emails from, and the such, who seem fabulously pessimistic about this team is just remarkable. I got to ask a question. Do you think Tennessee fans, Tennessee's a number two seed, they are a very popular Final Four pick. Do you think Tennessee fans are in freakout mode right now? Because their team, just like Duke, lost their final home game of the regular season against a bitter rival. They played Kentucky. They then went into their tournament, and in the first game of their tournament, they got beat by a, you know, okay but not great team. In the case of Duke, it was NC State. In the case of Tennessee, it was Mississippi State. Hey, in the case of Tennessee, Mississippi State beat them by 17. And Mississippi State blew them off the floor. Do you think Tennessee fans today are like going, we have no chance? I don't, you know, who is picking us? We could easily lose our first round game. I mean, I hear Duke fans saying, if we make the Sweet 16, it'll be a miracle. I'm like, what planet are you on? Literally a week and a half ago, prior to playing UNC, every one of us sort of thought that Duke was in the running for a one seed. And now people are, I don't understand it. The roller coaster ride of emotions makes no sense to me.
It does and it doesn't, right? There are some qualities that I know we're going to talk about, because we're going to talk about kind of the state of where we are and how we turn this thing around. Because, hey, look, Duke fans are not used to losing two in a row, right? We don't do it very often, which is a testament to how our program's been over the last 44 years. We don't lose that often. And when we do, we usually rebound and get to, you know, maybe the semifinals or the final of a tournament and end up trying to win the thing. I think the way we lost both of those games and some of the qualities that came out of both those games, or at least the themes that came out of both those games, are what people are hanging their hat on with regards to the pessimism. And I think we'll obviously talk a little bit more about that. But I think that's the case here, is people aren't approaching this with, last year we won the ACC title. We had won, what, 8-10 in a row or something like that entering the tournament. And we were like on fire. There was teams, people who were picking us to win the national championship. And it wasn't a far-fetched idea as a 5 seed, given that we are the hottest team in the country entering the tournament last year. This season, we're the very opposite of that. We are not the hottest team in the tournament right now. We're actually facing one of them in Vermont on Thursday. So you have that kind of comparison. But again, I also think, and this kind of leads to something else, right, is that John Shire is in his second year. And so it feels like we're in a glass bowl where people are saying, look, break out the magnifying glass and let's analyze every single detail of what John Shire is or is not doing to get this team ready. That's the question here. But also, you know, Coach K wasn't in the tournament in his second year, right? It was a much different scenario back in 1981 and 82 than it was for John Shire now. So there's a lot that I'm kind of glossing over because I know we're going to get in deep, but just know that it's the pessimism is warranted given how we've played the last couple of games and those themes that have arisen from those two games. But you're right. It is crazy that if we last year had said, yo, we're going to have a much better seed, you know, a similar record, and we're going to be playing in Brooklyn next year and people are going to be freaking out. We're going to be like, why? Like, why would we do that? And I get that people are freaked out, and I understand why it feels like we're nuts doing it.
Look, you were just talking about John Shire, and I have read and I have heard a tremendous amount of people criticizing the way John Shire, they say he needs to be more fiery. I'm not sure I completely disagree with that, by the way. People say, oh, he's just a recruiter. He's got no in-game coaching skills. I definitely disagree with that. The pessimism on John Shire, the people who are like, oh, you know, it doesn't feel like this team gets up for the big games and that kind of thing. He doesn't motivate them the way Coach K does. It's a little bit ridiculous. First of all, he doesn't motivate them the way Coach K does. No, duh. Hello. Coach K might have been the greatest motivator in the history of the college basketball game. I mean, when you think of the all-time greats and the things that they did, they were so that made them the all-time greats. And I'm talking about coaching. You know, a lot of them were X and O kind of guys. A lot of them were, you know, coaches who scheme different creative kind of things. I think Coach K was a motivator more than anything else. Duke always played super hard under Coach K. And it's not shocking that John Shire is not up to that standard yet. If he was, it would be freaky and unexpected. But I wanted to give folks this perspective on John Shire. You know, in 2022, after making a Final Four and concluding a decade-long run of multiple national titles, Jay Wright retired at Villanova and handed the reins over to his longtime assistant, Kyle Neptune. Kyle Neptune had been integral in Villanova's recruiting. He had been developing the players who won those titles. He had turned Villanova, he'd helped turn them into a perennial top 10 team. And he had actually left Philly 1 year earlier to coach at Fordham, where he'd taken a team that had only won two games the previous season and turned them into a 16-win club with all arrows pointed upwards. Kyle Neptune and John Shire were hired in very similar circumstances, very similar situations, at schools that were in very similar spots in the sport, both considered blue bloods with fabulous success at the exact same time. And if anything, Kyle Neptune was more of a no-brainer hire, a more obvious hire than Duke picking Shire, because they both had a long time in the program, but Neptune had actually gone someplace and shown success at that other place. It was an uncontested layup for Villanova to stay on top of the college basketball world with Kyle Neptune as their coach. What's more, unlike Duke, where Shire had recruited a bunch of guys, but like we didn't have a lot of guys coming back from the previous team, Villanova, Jay Wright, they brought back a lot of guys who played big roles on that Final Four team that was Jay Wright's last team. I think we know how this story goes. Villanova, which had not been ranked outside the top 30 in KenPom in a decade, finished last year as the number 51 team and just a 17-17 record. This year, they've lost three of their final four games. They finished the year 18-15, and they once again have missed the NCAA tournament, and they finished outside the top 30 in KenPom. Kyle Neptune, which should have been even more of an automatic hire and continue the success than John Shire, is struggling. Like, Nova has missed two straight tournaments. They are barely over 500 with this guy at the helm. And Duke has John Shire, who's winning 20-plus games every year and has a team that has been, you know, perennially ranked. How are Duke fans frustrated at John Shire, who's still, by the way, one of the youngest coaches in all of Division I basketball, who is still learning and coming into his own space? How are people saying he's only a recruiter when Duke is going out and winning games again and again and again at a high rate? I don't understand it. And like, I've heard Duke fans saying, Hubert Davis, we need someone who's more like Hubert Davis. I'm like, are you kidding me? I know Hubert just won ACC Coach of the Year, which is a, you know, what a WTF kind of, I can't believe that. And yeah, Hubert Davis had a magical run his rookie season at the end of the year. Remember, that Carolina team almost didn't make the tournament. His second season, they had the worst season for a preseason number one team in history. And this year, he's apparently, you know, won Coach of the Year because he revitalized a team that was so mediocre a year ago. I mean, you know, we just take it as a given that Duke will be contenders in the ACC every year, that Duke will be a contender nationally every year. We feel like it's our birthright as Duke fans every single season to be among the best. The notion that a Duke team could finish outside the top 25 feels alien, like something that only happens in a freak global pandemic. But all we need to do is look a few miles down the road at the Carolina program that's had a couple pretty mediocre seasons since they transitioned, or look up the East Coast at the Villanova program that was one of our chief competitors for the top of the sport, to see what happens in a coaching transition. John Shire deserves all the praise for keeping this program where it's been for a long time. It's remarkable. Regardless of how this season ends, Duke could end this season on a three-game losing streak. That would suck. I want to be clear. That would suck. I'd be pissed off. None of us would be happy as fans. John Shire would still be one of the best coaches in the sport and doing an incredible job keeping a blue blood program as a blue blood program at the very, very top of the sport. And he should be praised and thanked for doing that.
So you said a lot, and I agree with like almost all of it, right? There's quite a bit in there. Let me start with this. You mentioned some people had talked about, oh, we should have someone like a Hubert Davis. Hubert Davis figured out a way to take the big you know, the ACC player of the year and the Pac-12 player of the year, have him on the same team and do absolutely nothing with him, right? Like, I don't know that we want Hubert Davis if that's what we're coming with. I say, kind of to sum up some of the stuff that you said about Shire, because I agree, right? There's some things that obviously I would wish that John Shire would do better, but I also recognize he's in his second year. He was born in 1987, Jason. I think you were in college when this kid was born.
I was a sophomore junior.
He is younger. He is younger than me, right? He graduated with Sam. I guess he graduated maybe the year before Sam. He is not that old. And we are talking about him like he is this, he took over as some 60-year-old guy who's had a career of, you know, being a head coach elsewhere, and he should just come in and just turn this thing around. But I also ask you that, not necessarily you, Jason, but I ask all the people this. If this version of John Shire, who has won what a combined 55 games at this point in his career in 2 years, if this is not acceptable for you, what do you want? I say that because there's not much better you can get than, again, winning an ACC title your first year. The GOAT did not do that. GOAT has done a lot of things. He did not win an ACC title his first year. He didn't win a national championship until, what, his, like, 10th year? He kept getting the Final Fours, but he didn't get to Final Four until his 6th year, right? So we're still ahead of the eight ball here, or at least ahead, you know, if we're running the thing where they have the ghost clock on some of these video games, you're ahead of the ghost clock right now when it comes to John Shire. But if you want us to have a better coach than John Shire, you have to ask yourself, what coach do you actually want? Because even the coaches that are considered some of the greatest coaches of all time have not been coaching lately as good as John Shire has been. Jason, I look at East Lansing. Tom Izzo has not done great the last couple of years. Yes, his team may have gotten the tournament, but barely, right? They've kind of used Tom Izzo's name to get into the tournament. A lot of people think that this, especially this Michigan State team, we mentioned all these games that we thought that we had done well against and their best wins of the year. We did not mention Michigan State in that, and we beat them the second game of the year, third year of the game of the year. I think when it comes to John Shire, there's things that we want him to do, but what I want him to do is to be a guy who grows on the job every single day, because honestly, he has the biggest scrutiny of any college coach. Because he's following the GOAT and he's following at a program that everybody hates and wants to lose every single time. And then turn right around and tell you, oh, because he's losing some of these games, that he shouldn't be the head coach. That is a huge job that people don't understand the scrutiny that he has to go through every single day with a young coaching staff, of which I think the average age was, what, 29 or something like that. So they're even younger than him, right? The only guy that's older than him is Mike Schrage and Chris Carwell. I think maybe one other, right? Like, everyone else is younger than him. So we're even talking about a coaching staff who's learning on the job from a guy who's learning on the job. Let these guys learn. You want people to stick around, let these guys stick around and learn, and let these guys figure it out for themselves. I understand that as Duke fans, we want to win the national championship every year. I also understand that every year we don't get that luxury. Every year we don't win the national championship. We'd love to do that every year. If we could win every national championship for the rest of my life, would be happy with it. But I think we need to rally behind this team, because this team may not win a national championship, but they have the tools to. And just because they don't doesn't make it an unsuccessful year. Doesn't make John Shire an unsuccessful coach. The jury has not even been forced to go out to deliberate on that yet, because we have not yet entered that phase of this conversation. So when it comes to John Shire, yes, there's things that I want him to learn to do, but he is doing that right now. And I think I am going to give him the grace to learn that and allow him to take some of these teams and try to mold them into the program that he wants, because that is what's going to make Duke better in the long run. That's what's going to give us that national championship that he's going to. It may not be this year. Maybe it's next year. Maybe it is this year. We don't know. But the pessimism that is around this team should not be centered around how the coach is performing, because I think John Shire, when he got some of those Coach of the Year votes, people understood the job that he had to do as a second-year head coach, and he has done that well, and he has improved on the job. Let that man keep improving.
All right, we're going to transition a little tiny bit to some stuff that's been going on with the team that we just want to sort of let you folks know about. I've heard from sources close to the program that they've had Since they lost to NC State, they've had several days of hard practices, arguably the hardest practices they've had all year. It was described to me as not fun. I think the team probably needed a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. I will also tell you that the team had a players-only meeting. The players got together and aired out some things among themselves. Now, I've heard about four different sources about what happened in that players-only meeting. I heard some of the players may not have thought that it went as, you know, that great. But I've heard a bunch of others who said the things that were said were the things that needed to be said. And that they think the team is going to come together and find a bit more focus, and that the team understands that they have been outworked in recent games, and that they haven't played together the way they need to, and they haven't played hard enough. And I think it's great that they had that conversation and that they recognize that that's important. It's not easy to be reflective on your own self, but from what I hear, this Duke team is doing a little bit of that in these extra days that they've had. I should also add, Duke will play on Friday. Duke last played on Thursday. It's quite a bit of a break. And in fact, if you think about it, you know, they played Carolina on Saturday, the week before. I think someone pointed out it's like one game in like 17 days or something like that. It's mm-hmm. a long time that Duke has. I'm sorry, I think it's one game in 11. I'm not going to do the math. In any event, it's one game in a long, it's a big break for this Duke team. And you can worry about rust, perhaps. I'll go the other way and I'll say, you know, Jeremy Roach has been banged up. Getting a little time off, not playing games for, you know, that might be just what Jeremy Roach needs to go back to being the Jeremy Roach that we had in December, January, and most of February. There are other guys in this team who are a little bit banged up who I'm sure are glad for the, even though the practices have been hard, they're glad to not be actually physically battling against another team. So I'm glad I can come here and report to all of you that the team recognized that they needed to do something and that they had a team meeting. I'm glad that I can come here and report to you that people are saying practices are not fun. The coaches are working these guys, and that everybody recognizes that that work is necessary. Because frankly, if I hadn't heard those two things, I'd be more worried than I am right now.
So Jason, I am also glad that they had a team meeting to kind of air out some of these things that they know are plaguing themselves, right? I will tell people who are probably listening to your words and saying, why are they waiting till now to have a team meeting? I promise you, this is not the first team meeting that they've had this season. This is something that teams do because that's how teams get better. And sometimes when you have a bad outing, I'm sure they had a team meeting after that, you know, week where we lost to Arkansas and Georgia Tech, and they figured out a way to get it together for that next stretch, right? There's times where players are going to come together and say, hey, look, we're not living up to standards. They may, you know, point fingers at each other and they may hash it out. Some of them come to blows. I'm not saying that this one did, but like some of them will get very heated. And at the end of the day, they realize that they went through that battle together as a brotherhood, as a family, and they're going to come out of that stronger. I'm hoping that's what comes out of this, because Jason, a lot of the themes that we have seen that I alluded to earlier, those themes are troublesome, and that's why the pessimism exists amongst the fan base, right? You mentioned the lack of toughness, the lack of urgency, the lack of passion, the lack of competitive fire. Those are words that we have heard over the last few weeks that we do not like to hear at all when it comes to Duke basketball, but that has been present. I'm glad that it's recognized, and it's not necessarily on them to fix it. It's on them to recognize this is what we need to do, not just because we're Duke basketball, but because we're a team, and a team is supposed to come out. And if you want to win, you have to outwork the other team. You have to out-hustle the other team. You have to, yes, execute on offensive defense, but you have to do that together. You have to be a team that can step out on any court, and it doesn't matter. Like for us, it's a little bit more heightened, right? Because we have D-U-K-E across our chest, and everybody who faces us is like, oh, this is the game. We're not a team that can get by saying, oh, we're just over here in the corner, don't worry about us. Everyone comes to give us their best shot because they want to be the team in that one shining moment that is seen celebrating against us in the NCAA tournament. Everybody wants it. Our job is to make sure none of them have that luxury, have that opportunity. But to do that, all of the buzzwords that we've seen, the theme that we've had over the last couple of weeks, the toughness, the heart, the competitive fire, that even elevates up another level because this is the NCAA tournament. And I hope that these guys recognize that. This is the last chance that this team has to do something special. And I hope they take that opportunity. And just like NC State did in the ACC tournament, I hope they go effing get it. That's the idea here. If you focus and worry about the details and stuff like that and say, oh, this guy's not pulling their weight, that guy's not pulling their weight, you're going to lose. But if you guys all come together and say, let's go effing get this tournament, let's go show people that we're not the you know, weak, soft, whatever, you know, adjectives you want to describe team that people think we are. Why are people so upset? Because they think we are that team. Let's go prove them wrong and turn some hearts and minds in the you know, in the balance in the as we do this. So that's what I'm hoping for this team. The question is that first 5 minutes against Vermont, are they going to come bring it? A team that I know we'll preview in depth, but a team that we should go out in the first 5 minutes established for the rest of the NCAA tournament. You thought we were going to roll over? This ain't the time. Y'all are going to have to come with it a lot better than you have, because we have ratcheted our game up to that next level. That's what I'm hoping for this team.
Yeah, my bottom line, my last word on all this would be this. Would you rather have a team that comes into the tournament confident, but maybe a little bit complacent, or a team that comes in the tournament mad? Because I think that this Duke team, at least from what I'm hearing, they may be coming in this tournament mad. Now, it's possible that mad could be mad at each other.
Right.
You know, that there could be internal squabbles that are causing some of this. And if you're mad at each other, it ain't going to work out for you. And it's really easy. Mad goes to I give up really quickly in a case like that. But on the other hand, if it's mad that, like you said, we're being disrespected, if it's mad that we aren't playing the way we know we can, that can turn into a monster of a team very, very quickly.
Chips on their shoulders. That's the type of mad we're looking for. And the question in the big question, Jason, that we have entering this tournament is, do they have that chip, right? It's not a typical quality for a Duke basketball team to come in and be, you know, one of the best teams in college basketball and also have a chip on their shoulder and be angry that everybody's disrespecting them. Everyone gives us as much respect as they possibly can while short of wanting to beat us, right? Because if they beat us, they want it to be elevated to that point where on one shining moment, they get like 35 seconds. They want that. So for us, it's going to be a new thing if they do come out with a chip on their shoulder, but we will find out very, very quickly in that first game against Vermont if they have that.
Yeah, by the way, the last thing I will say is this. Even though this team, in theory, has only one guy in Ryan Young, who is a member of the rotation who cannot return, there are a lot of these guys who know that this is it. There are a lot of these guys exactly. Who know, you know, if we mess around here, I'm putting on my Duke uniform for the last time. Way more guys than people may want to think know that that's the case with them right now. And I hope that motivates them as well, because I know playing for Duke is special. These guys all know it is special. And I just want them to go out proud and happy about the way it ended for them.
Absolutely. I think that we can leave that there. Jason, before we, if I may transition, we are not the only team, or at least the men's basketball team is not the only team in the NCAA tournament representing Duke University. Of course, I'm talking about the Duke women's basketball team, who qualified for the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2018. So congratulations to Kara Lawson and the Duke women. Right now, their tournament, right now, they are the seventh seed in Regional 3. They do it a little differently on the women's side. They basically have two regional sites, and they split up into two brackets. So they are in Regional 3. They will head to Columbus for their pod for the first and second rounds. They take on the 10 seed Richmond in the first round. They're in a pod with number 2 Ohio State and number 15 Maine. The region also is led by number 1 seed USC, who's very, very good. Juju Watkins, if you've not seen her play, is just a walking bucket. They have UConn, Virginia Tech, Baylor, and Syracuse also in their bracket. 8 teams, Jason. We talk about 4 teams, 5 teams made the NCAA tournament on the men's side. 8 ACC teams make the women's bracket. So again, a testament to the conference being very, very strong on the women's side and being loaded. Yeah. And I'll end with this, Jason. 22 teams in the country have both their men's and women's basketball teams in the tournament. Duke is one of them. So Cameron's going to have some loaded practice schedules, but that's what we want in March. And I know some people on Sports Center yesterday saw the Kara Lawson segment that they had on the Handle Hard Better and how that's really galvanized not just support for the team, but also has been kind of a rallying cry for so many people in different walks of life going through so many different ills. I have one of the shirts. It's great. It's a great shirt. She sells it on her personal website. Highly encourage people grab it. But that mantra, Handle Hard Better, is something that can be used for the women and can be used for the men in this tournament. This is the point where now the hard is here, and it's not going to get any easier. These games aren't going to be easier. So learning from Kara Lawson's words and applying those to this tournament will hopefully yield very much success for both the men and women. So again, congratulations to the women's basketball team on making the tournament. They start on Friday as well. I believe their game is at 2 p.m. So it's right before the men play on Friday night. Friday is a big day for Duke basketball. Let's go get it.
I love it. I love it. Hey, look, like we mentioned earlier, I just want to remind everybody, we will be back in your feed probably tomorrow or maybe the next, I think probably Wednesday, to give you a little preview of the Vermont Catamounts. Donald and I doing a deep dive. I'm pouring through all my tape. I got a whole library here of tape on Vermont that I'm looking at.
I'm drinking Green State beer and drinking maple and having maple syrup. That's my it's the eye test.
Oh, that I like your preparation better than mine. Let me tell you, my friend. Until then, this has been episode 612 of the DBR, the Duke Basketball Roundup. I'm Jason Evans. He is Donald Wine. Thank you for joining us. And here's the Duke Band. They're playing us out, taking us home.